Thanks for tuning in this weekend to another episode of Nevada Backcountry. We've got a repeat guest in the studio. I'm not going to go through the long-winded introduction this time, Tim. Everybody knows you. Tim Burnett, thank you for coming back in.
You maybe give me too much credit. Repeat or retread? Recycled. Reborn.
Yeah.
So let's... Hey, it's a recycled guest.
That's right.
Tim, I got you in the studio. A lot of stuff going on in your life right now, especially with the clothing line coming out, stuff around the shop. But the important stuff, that's what I want to talk about.
Important stuff? Oh, my kids.
Two mule deer.
My kids are so good.
Yes.
Yeah. Mama and the babies, that's all that matters, right?
There you go. You check that block.
Yeah.
Now.
Yeah. Now all six listeners have got that figured out that I'm a good guy.
Five. Right? Three of them are in this room.
Three of them are in this room.
Yeah, three of them are in the room.
No.
So let's talk about your mule deer hunts.
Yeah.
You had one in Utah, one in Nevada.
Yep.
What do you want to go first?
We might as well start in order. Nevada was first, I guess. That started August 10th. Utah didn't start for another week after that, but no, it was good.
What unit?
Great season. I'm not telling you what unit.
Jeez,
there's only like five tags in there this year.
Now, let's do cardinal directions.
cardinal directions. I'll tell you what, it was
northern part of the state.
Normally, I hunt northern Nevada. Normally, I love Big Six. I don't know why. I think it's because I can get up there close to Idaho, you know, close to the homeland.
Yeah.
And hunt some of those deserts.
And there's some great animals out there.
Yeah. I feel like this year, a lot of our customers struggled in Big Six. But then you get to talking to them and hearing where they go and that.
Yeah. And they go to the most popular spots on the planet.
Yeah. You want to know where I hunt? The crappy spot. Look for the biggest butthole of northern Nevada, and that's where
you go?
Yeah. Both of your hunts were very successful.
Well, I'm a good hunter, Dave. You know, I've been around for a long time.
I think I even saw that on a video or two that you look like you know what you're doing.
The thing of it is you can't kill a big deer if there's not a big deer there. And I just happen to have a really good unit this year. I mean, I've had it once before when I first moved to Nevada and killed a great buck. And it's been a long year, a lot of years waiting to get this tag again. And it's a good unit, which I think a lot of units in Nevada are good.
Yeah.
People that I talk to wanting to bow hunt in Nevada, I'm like, if you're an out-of-stater, just get a tag. Because I guarantee there's a great buck in every unit in Nevada. You just got to hunt for him.
Without a doubt. I mean, there may be areas that have a lot less deer than they used to be historically, but...
It all depends on how hard you want to work.
Right.
I know a guy that pulls legitimate stud bucks out of the rubies every single year.
Yeah,
if you talk to people, it's like, well, I didn't see anything in the rubies. I hunt. Well, if you want to put in the work, they're there.
Tell you what, Nevada, and I think every state, bow hunting in general, but specifically Nevada, you've got to be willing to stay mobile. And that's some of the conversations we have there at the shop. Guys are like, oh, we went out there for a week, me and my buddies, we set up base camp, and we just didn't see anything but people and everything. I'm like, well, how often did you move? Like, did you change? No, once we're committed, we're committed. I'm like, well, there's the downside to a base camp, right?
Yeah,
the plus side is you can have a great party and great friends and have
that's
that
not
whole
what I'm out there for,
Dutch
though.
Oven experience and everything. It's you want that, but you want to kill something too, and you might have to change things up a little bit.
Like, all three of us were very familiar with camping off our backs. I do. I have a base camp, but I may come back to it after 3 days.
Yeah, see, I've grown to, I don't enjoy a base camp. I mean, that probably comes a lot from hunting alone and not spending a lot of time hunting with other groups. But even when I do, and that when we talk about the Utah hunt, we'll get into some of that of what I didn't like about that. And it's, I don't like having a home base. Even my Nevada tag, which was fairly close to home, I'm like, I can go home every night, you know?
Yeah.
I can hunt before work every morning. This is great. Well, at the end of the day, is it that great? No, the problem is it's like, well, I live in Fallon, you know, so.
I live in Fallon, so, you know. Yeah, my main house is in Fallon.
Yeah, my second home, But it's like, I've really grown to not like a home base just because you feel like you're always tied to that. And, you know, maybe that's some of the things that I really like about hunting in Alaska and some of these other parts of the country is you're forced to live off of your back, which really makes it a great experience in my opinion. So, but in Nevada, if you can, you got to be willing to move. If you're not finding bucks in a canyon, you got to go to another canyon.
Yeah.
And
then
you got to go to another one and you got another one. And guess what? You bumped them out. Now you got to go to another one or somebody, other hunters move in because we're hunting public land. So there's all kinds of variables that you got to deal with. And
you got to be very flexible.
To be mobile. You got to have a killer quad or something.
Yeah. So. I like having the quad. Yeah. I love having the base camp because a shower.
Why the bacon? Oh, the shower. Yeah.
Dude.
See, I can go day. I can go weeks without a shower. I go weeks without a shower at home. They call me Stinky Tim for no. Just kidding.
No.
I was like, whoa.
Well, and that all started several years ago with a certain hunting buddy I have that got me the whole the shower thing, and I'm now.
I was out there on that sheep hunt. It was kind of nice to have a shower at the end of the day.
It was so nice. Like every day, every other day, it was.
Well, sheep hunting is a different animal, though. They tend to be at the same. You know what I mean with mule deer, but you can't. So even for mule deer, though, Dave, you like a base camp.
Yeah, I do. I like to bring the base camp out there, and you know, even if anything, I come back after, you know, 2 or 3 days, and I can have a nice decent sized meal, maybe relax a little bit, restock my pack, and then, you know, back up the mountain I go. Mm. Or especially if I'm not really seeing anything, you know, if I'm having a hard time like locating animals, I may come back, kind of re-gear myself. Maybe move. Mm-hmm. I've done that before, and then hit the hills again.
I might be putting my crappy hunting skills on blast, but I can't tell. And I'm not talking about like forkies or like your typical little 4-point. Truly, like big bucks. They show up in an area that you're in, and they're there for a day or two, and then they're gone because they either felt the pressure or somebody pressured them into your area. But with big mule deer. Like, they're just not tied to a certain area for much more than 4 or 5 days at a time.
Yeah.
Now, everybody tell me how I'm wrong.
You're not. I don't think you're wrong.
Everything's situational.
Yeah.
You know? There's no set. This is how deer act. This is what they do. This is where they're going to be. There's no set. They're where
like
they're
white
at because that's where they feel safe.
Right.
And one day they might feel safe somewhere. The next day they might be. He's in changes his mood and he goes somewhere else, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
The thing with hunting, and we'll jump into this Nevada hunt specifically is I knew four of the five tag holders or six tag holders. We knew four of them. One of them was one of my staff shooters. Another one was, won't mention his name cause I know he wants to tag again this year. Cause he actually turned it back in cause he couldn't find the buck that he was after.
Mm.
There was not a lot of people that had that tag.
Yeah, but and Mike doesn't count as a hunter.
Mike doesn't really. He's not a killer. I can tell you that.
No, he is not. He's not.
No, but so I really busy. Didn't get a lot of chance to scout real heavily. So right before season, I finally got a chance to go out, and I'm getting field reports from these other three people. We're just not seeing anything. You know, we're not finding what we're after. We may turn the tag back in. Blah blah blah. And I'm like, well, I'll never turn this tag back in. But I went out and left the shop at like 3 o'clock or something. By 5:30, I had found three shooters already. And I just got lucky. I just happened to be cruising by on my quad, thought, you know what? I'll bet nobody hikes over that ridge to see what's on the backside of there. I think there's a little bit of a basin, a little bit of a bowl. I'm just going to park, spend the 15 minutes, 20 minutes to get to the top and see what's on the other side. Well, bang, there they were. So, you know, that made the rest of my hunt easy because I saw what I was after, you know, and at that point, then you're just starting to come up with a plan of, well, how can I get into this consistently so that I can scout him and figure out what he's doing, you know, because now I've got 4 or 5 days before the season starts. I need to figure out what this buck's doing so that when I can come in, when it's legal, I'm going to come in and kill him, you know. So
how far from where you initially found him to where you killed him?
This deer was unique. He was not traveling anywhere.
Oh, really? Okay.
From the place that I first saw him, first laid eyes on him, I've got great video footage of it, to where I missed him, he was probably 40, 50 yards of that same spot. And that was 4 weeks later because I didn't get a shot at him until after I had gone to Utah and killed my buck.
Right.
But this buck, well, he had his core area and that's where he was at,
you know,
which is not always typical. Like you say, sometimes they'll just get up and, you know, move somewhere else. This area where I was hunting, there was water. There was a creek down the bottom. So the water wasn't the issue. There was cattle, which can really play into and affect how the deer react and everything. And it's dry as hell and crickets everywhere. And so there's a lot of variables this year that made this year different.
Hey, go grab a refill. We got to take a quick break. But when we come back, we'll jump back into it. Stay tuned to 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk.
The
The show is Nevada Backcountry. The guest is Tim Burnett from Hunt and House Archery Center here in Reno and from the hit TV series Solo Hunter. Before we went to break, Tim, you were telling us about your Nevada mule deer. So you find him?
Yeah, found him. Right, and I was like, that's my buck. I don't care. I'm not. I don't care about any of the other deer in there. There was several old deer, like big 3x3s, big 3x2s, one 2x2 that'd scare you. He was so big. And those are the bucks that I got Mike in on, you know,
okay.
I took Mike to see if he could get one killed in there. But so there's a bunch of great deer that I'm happy with. And let's just get this out. I don't kill big deer all the time. Like, I've been lucky enough to kill a handful of really great deer, what I would consider great deer. But I kill good deer, you know, and that's, I think, what most guys are after is they want something that flips the switch, that when they're scanning that hillside, you know, looking at buck, oh, there's a buck. That's what I want. That's really what guys are after.
Yeah.
And that might be different for everybody.
Yeah. Know? 2 years ago, my hunt, I wasn't having any luck getting way back in, and I kept having this little weird, did you see the deer?
I think I showed you. Me, yeah.
Weird looking thing. He was like a palmated little 4-point, but the 4-point, he was weird. And then the other side was a fork and horn. Every time I'd come off this hill, he'd be in the same spot. I just walked past him. The last day I was heading home and he's standing there. And I'm like, well, all right.
At a certain point, they're asking for it.
Well, yeah. It's all right. God, he ate so well. Oh, my. And he was only a half a mile from the UTV. So I thought, well, he's 56 yards, thumped him, threw him over my back, and hauled him to the UTV.
Yeah, see, and the guys at the shop, Chandler and Christian, you know, I mean, and the guys at the shop that maybe aren't as old as I am and haven't been around as long as I have, you know, I feel guilty sometimes that I have as many hunting opportunities as I've had. But at the same time, it's put me in a place where I can walk past a deer and feel like, you know what, I don't need to notch my tag this year. There's been a lot of years where I haven't notched a tag.
What flips the switch for you on mule deer?
Now, I mean, the story now might not have been the same 2 years ago or 5 years ago or whatever, but now I'm looking for a buck deer. You know, I'm looking for something that is going to go on the wall. And when you're talking in August, they're going to be in the velvet. I'm a sucker for big velvet bucks.
Beautiful velvet buck.
Typical, non-typical. So
it doesn't matter. You know, in this case, I found two bucks that were both clean 4x4s with eye guards that were in two different areas. So I knew I had two target animals. And then there's a third mystery buck that I never laid eyes on that I had heard stories of in the shop from a very reliable source that I spent a lot of time looking for that deer. And he's still there. And he is an absolute freak of nature.
Yeah.
But the deer obviously wasn't killable because he was nocturnal or wasn't, you know, coming out. I mean, I'm a pretty decent hunter. I've got good glass. I'm patient. Was able to spend a lot of time, you know, over a 4-week period of time to find that deer.
A lot of it's timing, though. Don't you agree?
Yeah, timing. And you know, what's crazy is I'm pretty sure that buck was seen about 20 miles away in the winter or during the
rifle season.
Before the winter even set in. Yeah, during the rifle season.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So he was in a totally, completely different unit.
Anybody seen him since?
I've seen photos. And he's there.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
he's still out there. Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
Which shocked me because I'm like, there's no reason they need to travel that far. But guess what? Sometimes they do. You know, the buck I killed in Utah, he was traveling over 2 miles every day.
Yeah.
Food to water, bedding in different spots. But that deer was cruising. This buck here in Nevada wasn't moving half a mile.
The one in Utah, though, he was the bigger of the two.
Yeah, that was.
Yeah, he was that big, heavy.
Yeah,
big, heavy. Yeah,
yeah, awesome buck. That was inline cheater.
Yeah, that cheaters.
Yeah.
I don't know what that Utah buck that
anything
you killed?
Anything extra
for a buck like that.
What's crazy is that buck had been seen and he's visible because that hunt was very unique. It's not what I typically do. We set that hunt up with a group of friends of mine that I have here in town that was something that we could do special, right? So in the past, I've always done solo hunts. It's always been me doing my thing or hunting with my brother or whatever. Well, we wanted to take a couple of new hunters out. We wanted to document it in a different way. You know, for one, I'm kind of sick of filming my own hunts. For two, we wanted to get the reaction of two guys that had never been on a hunt before. And, you know, we had this opportunity where it's like we needed a controlled environment, you know, to do it in. And it just all came together. So it's a special hunt. It wasn't a hard hunt. It was a hunt of opportunity, really, you know.
So you guys filmed all that. Is that coming out?
We did. Yeah. It's coming out with the release of the clothes.
Oh, it is. Okay. Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Nice. So, which should be here in the next week or so. So.
Oh, cool.
Maybe even by the time this thing airs, I don't know. We'll see.
Maybe.
So what about Utah? What part of the state was that in?
It was northern Utah, north central, just outside of Park City.
Oh, okay.
So Colville area there. Yeah. There's a very reputable outfitter there that runs a lot of great hunts, R&K Outfitters. He just, the guys here in town, they have, what is it, High Desert Armory?
Yeah.
Out in Washoe Valley. He's also got a ranch north of town where we do a lot of shooting, the 2A Ranch. We do a lot of our gun shooting and everything out there. Jared Overmeyer, Ron, Sarah, I can't even pronounce his name, Sarah Gotti or something, I can't remember. They invited me to go on this hunt, you know, and put this all together and kind of do this little project thing, so.
Yeah, now I've seen the teaser. That buck was walking when you shot him.
He had just stopped, walked right towards us, and then stopped, and then I pinned him. Can't give you the kill shot. Okay. The teasers, you know, so probably cut frame.
It's radio. Right, paint the picture with words for me, Tim.
I'll tell you what, man, I stood there for an hour and a half. that was a very cool hunt. Minutes. Even though it wasn't like a physically demanding hunt. I mean, we were going back to a 5-star lodge every night. Steak dinners.
Is that
like
in the video?
Meals. Heck no, I'm not going to. I don't want everybody to know that I was able to experience that. You know? But take it if you get it.
Heck yeah.
But it was a different style of a hunt, but. That part of it was easy. The hunting part of it's still hard, even though there was nobody else in my area. We knew that we had this area, and essentially they had several bucks designated throughout their properties, but everybody in camp had an opportunity to great deer. Like, everybody was assigned a guide, an area of the ranches where they were going to hunt, and they all had target deer that I would have been stoked on, you know? Nice. Knowing beforehand, they gave me the tough one. They're like, this buck's pretty much unkillable, so we're going to send Tim and Carson in there to try to kill this deer. And I'm like, you know what? It's not on my dime. I don't care. You know, yeah. I got a week here.
What made him unkillable? What was that? Was he nocturnal or just the distance he moved or what?
So where this buck was living was on another property that they didn't have access to hunt. But where he was going to bed during the day was in an area where they had to hunt. But all of their, I guess, laying eyes on the deer, for the most part, was on this other property that they couldn't hunt. And that's where he was at. So some of the other hunters in camp sit there and would watch him from a distance. We're like, this buck is never going to leave the property. So as the days are going on into the hunt, we're going back and having dinner. And the other guy that's hunting the other property, they just want to watch this buck because he's big. And he's like, that buck's never coming off this property. I'm like, well, Carson said he does. You know, he said he's seen him come off and bed in this area, so I'm going to trust Carson, and I'll be patient. Yeah. I'm what you would call a definition of an insane hunter. I'll do the same thing over and over and over and over if I know that deer has done that before.
You know? Okay.
Because a deer eventually is going to repeat his habit and go and do it that time of year anyway.
When you tell that story, that reminds me of the super wide peavine buck.
Oh, yeah.
Do you know what I'm talking about? That everybody's got pictures of. Everybody's seen it.
Yeah.
And it always goes on to that rancher's property. And he's not an anti-hunter, but he's drawn that line of like, hey, look, if this buck leaves my property, I can't, it's fair game, but I'm not letting anybody on my property to kill it. And I'll be honest, I think, have you ever seen that thing hit any pictures of it on the ground, Dave?
No.
I think it died of old age.
Maybe. Well, it's like that buck that's in Montreux.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
That buck had been stuck twice during archery, hadn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think the guy had on public land.
Double drops.
Yeah. Just a giant. There's deer like that. There's another monster. Well, there's another Spanish one. Up, Springs. You know, there's unhuntable. You know,
there's a few Mount Rose up above Hobart Reservoir.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a real common area for like.
Dave, you gotta quit dropping names, Dave.
Non-typical genetics.
Because I might draw that tag one day.
Well, the kicker is these animals. The last time I was up there last year, they sit right on that Lake Tahoe State Park boundary. But right on the other side of that thing is not the basin. So
you know what they say, Dave? They say you can hunt them there, but you just can't kill them there.
Yeah.
You can hunt the state park. You just can't kill it in the state park.
You just can't kill it in the state park.
So have either of you guys gotten hands on the sheds from that Montreux deer?
No. Did he drop them already?
Yeah.
Because I had a guy that I'm friends with that lives up in there, and he showed me pictures of it a few weeks ago, still holding his horns, so his antlers. So he must have just within the last 3 weeks or so.
I didn't get the name. Same thing. My neighbor's brother lives up there, So that's gotcha. Who I would get pictures yeah. and everything.
That thing's a monster.
Supposedly a young, he said young kid picked him yeah. up. So I was wondering if either of you guys had seen
no,
him.
There's no, there's some young families up in there. There's some kids that are, you know, yeah. get after it. Maybe we'll get lucky and get our hands on them. I don't know.
Yeah. I know Chris Costin from the Muley Foundation.
Has he seen it?
He's got a ton of pictures of that thing.
I don't that's even get too excited tag, about those kind yeah. of just because you know you can't.
Hey, I don't want to cut you off, Tim, but we need to take a quick break for commercials. Everyone stay tuned to 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. And thank you to Legacy Sports International, home of the Howa Superlight Rifle, for sponsoring the show. I'd be remiss if I didn't mention Truck Envy on South Virginia Street. Go get your truck outfitted before summer gets here. Now let's jump back into the conversation with Tim Burnett from Solo Hunter and Hunt and House Archery Center. What were you saying before we went to break there, Tim? Something about overcrowding?
I don't want to see a soul when I'm out there. No, honestly. Yeah. There's been a yep. few times that I've met some really cool people on the mountain, and, yeah. I'm glad for that. But for the most part, if I see you coming, I'm ditching. You know, yeah. I'm laying in the ditch. Yeah. I'm out there hunting. And this year, I didn't see a soul. I didn't see anybody come through there other than I took Mike out there to try to get a buck killed. But yeah. I didn't see a single person.
Did Mike kill anything?
No.
He's not a killer.
Yeah. Okay.
He's
fine.
All right.
No. Kid can shoot a bow, but
yeah, oh, he can. Yeah. He can destroy
stuff. He killed a coos with his bow actually last year down in Arizona.
Did he?
Yeah.
He killed a javelina.
Didn't he get a javelina
or something,
too? Right? But the javelina, yeah, I think, walked to him or something. There
you go. No, we can't bag on Mike. We do enough of that in the shop as it is.
All right.
So, no, but he's a good dude.
But it was a great hunt, man. I enjoyed every minute of it. And like I say, I was able to go out early and be into work by noon. And I was able to leave work early and get out there and get a couple hours in before dark. Just nice. just a great time, you know, just a good fun hunt.
Well, and you had me confused at first because you said initially, well, let's go in order. And the first deer you killed was actually in Utah.
Yeah.
Then so you went to Utah, got that done.
Yep.
Came back and got back
How
on.
How hard was that to leave 190 inch typical in Nevada and go kill 190 inch buck in Utah? You know, how tough was that?
Yeah, aw shucks.
Yeah, that's a tough one, man.
But to come off of that buck where I knew where he was, yeah, and I had to go to Utah for that, because I mean those dates were set in stone. Like, it was hard to pull off that deer.
So why had,
if somebody else is gonna kill him, you know
what happened up until that point?
I missed him early, and then went back in and hunted him and had another shot at him again later, you know. And then he kind of went underground. Like, I didn't see him for a few days, and then I'd see him right before dark, and then I wouldn't see him for another few days. So finally, I think a couple of days before the season closed, I was going in to hunt him, and 4 o'clock in the afternoon, looked to my right, and the second buck that I was wanting to kill was just bedded underneath a cedar all by himself. The wind was just amazing, and I'm like, well, this is kind of a gift here, you know. If I don't take this opportunity, I'm an idiot.
Those don't get served up too often.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And within 15 minutes, he was dead, you know, so it just worked out right that way. And yeah, hopefully I'll get that tag again at some point and find another good buck. But
yeah.
Yeah.
I want to pat. I mean, that the deer that you killed is a heck of a good deer.
Great deer.
Yeah. Oh my God. It's fantastic deer. Jeez.
Big frame, kind of light, you know. He was an older deer, but he kind of not real heavy. Total opposite of the buck in Utah. The buck in Utah was old, heavy mass, you know. This buck was just a great big frame.
But and you said all the velvet damage was him tumbling.
Oh, he was perfect. You know, story about that one. So I'm in, and I flying in on my four wheeler when I see him. So I see him from the four wheeler road, and I'm like, oh, this is perfect. He's got his attention on me. I'm sitting here. I pulled right up to where there was a cedar right next to my four wheeler, so I could slip off my four wheeler, set up my camera on him, and then all I had to do was just get to the end of my four-wheeler, and then I'm hidden from his view to the cedar, and then I just disappear. And so he's just paying attention to the four-wheeler and the camera. But I set up my camera on what I thought was the buck, you know, this big frame. And it's filming in the daylight's hard. When you have hard light and it's just hard sun, and on my camera I have what's called the peaking meter set. So I look up there and I see this shape of a big buck rack in the camera, and all it is just these peaking lights telling me that it's in focus. It's hard to explain what
okay.
it is, but it's like green lighting in the viewfinder of the camera that peaks or that lights up when your camera's in focus on whatever. So I see this frame and I think I'm in focus on the buck. As it turns out, it wasn't. It was a big piece of tree.
Okay, some branches.
Because the whole time I'm thinking, I got the camera on him. I'm going to sneak up around the top, kill him. It's going to be all on camera. This is going to be epic. Well, it was epic. Everything worked out like a plan. Then I go back to look at the camera, and I'm just filming this stump for 15 minutes, you know, and got nothing out of it on film. But
Bummer.
Yeah,
bummer.
But that's the chance you take.
The reason I asked about the ATV, if you cut the running, because I've been in situations where, similar to that, cruising along and I spot an animal and I pull off to the road, kind of get the thing ditched in the brush or something. But as soon as I turn that thing off, man, that deer
well,
is like,
let's preface yeah. this. This deer's yeah. 1,000 yards away, at least. Okay. He was a bomb. I mean, okay. but I'm just cruising up the road and look across the hillside, and I got really good long distance eyes, and I just see a buck laying there, pull up the glass. So he's far enough away that his attention is focused on
An object.
Yeah, it's not like sound. He's 100 yards off the road. Okay. This is 1,000.
Gotcha.
Okay, least, so that's a different scenario.
So
okay.
that's why it took me 15 minutes, Dave, and not 5.
That's
true.
You saw okay. with a naked eye on an ATV a buck at 1,000 yards.
Oh yeah, no problem.
You eat carrots when they're what? When like, they're bedded. The deal,
that's a cool thing. Also, the cool thing about Nevada, you know where to look.
Yeah.
Right.
When
right,
the sun's shining hard. Okay. He's perfectly silhouetted, you know, against the sagebrush behind him, in the shade. Like, it's, you know exactly where to look.
Yeah, you hunt this terrain enough, Nevada and several other states like it, then you kind of have an idea of where the deer are.
4 o'clock in the afternoon, the shadows are pretty long on the east side, and so it's
you kind of know where to glass or look.
Man, 2 for 2. 100% on mule deer. Yeah.
This year.
Do you want to talk about the elk hunt at all or no?
You know, that was kind of, that's a frustration. Speaking of, the Idaho fishing game just botched it. Yeah, they screwed up.
I think we did a gripe episode.
I don't know if I
did. We did. Yeah,
we did.
I don't mean to gripe. There's a lot of challenges up there. I mean, I grew up there with the farming community and everything in elk, and I know how much damage the elk can do to crops, and it is devastating, and it's a lot of money's worth. But they came in and just killed, they just cleaned it out. They killed too many cows down in the lowlands, and the elk that I hunt is a resident herd for the most part. And where do the bulls go? If there's no cows, they're going to go to the next area where there's cows, and that just happens to be, a different unit. So I hunted hard for 6 days and saw 3 elk, in an area where I'll usually see hundreds of elk,
My dad had a similar experience up in the Palouse. Mm. Yeah, just a lot more hunters than elk.
So the state themselves went in and removed these animals?
So my cousin's a big landowner there. He's like, Tim, I'll usually have 300-400 head of elk on my fields at night. He's like, if I go out there, there might be 30. There might be 30 elk out there right now.
Oh, wow.
Because the elk are down there in the wintertime doing so much crop damage. And I mean, they were handing out tags. My dad, they gave him 6 cow tags. They're like, here, give these away. Kill some cows. Kill some elk. The thing about that is there's plenty of animals to be had. There's plenty, if they've allocated and feel like they need to kill that many animals, then it's probably factual, right? Problem is it's coming out of the same herd for the most part. Because it's just like that, the cow hunt up there. But you can kill a cow with a firearm within a mile of any cultivated field.
Right.
Well, it just so happens that some of these areas, those are resident elk that you're laying waste to, and there's only a few places where people can get access to do that, that's public access. And that just happens to be the herds that get wiped out.
Right.
Oh,
and I could be wrong. I mean, obviously this is just kind of the heat of the battle, right? Your emotions saying they screwed up our area and this and that. And I'm probably a big part of the blame too, because of who I am and what I've done in the past, to showcase certain parts of the state, and that might have brought in unnecessary amount of hunting pressure to that area. So I recognize that too, that I'm partially at fault here too, but it just wasn't what it has been. Because 2 years ago, I killed the biggest bull of my life in that same spot, So it's like, and had just dozens and dozens of bulls. So,
yeah,
it just changed. Right. It was disappointing. There's the rant.
There's
Well, you're not the only person that has stated that Idaho's really gone through a very bad transition the last few years. But I think even with having that opportunity to go hunt somebody's ranch for a cow elk, I still probably wouldn't get one.
that's Dave's nemesis is the cow elk. I'll lessen the sting on Idaho a little bit and say, if we think we got growing pains in Nevada, the growing pains in Idaho is unreal. And the amount of, you know, we got growing pains here from like the tech crowd, which I'm not worried about those dudes going out into my mule deer areas. It's not going to happen. But up there, they've got growing pains from the diehard hunting crowd. And there are a lot more people in the woods up in Idaho than ever before, period.
Yeah.
And that is your fault. No, I'm kidding.
You know, well, everything hunting right now is in an uptick. It's in a cycle of uptick.
If
that's a decent way of saying it. You've got social that makes everything appear amazing. You've got new career opportunities because of social and the way brands are working they're giving people more of a reason to be out there shed hunting and just being in the woods more consistently. So, you know, a kid can come out of high school and actually make a living in the outdoor industry because of just the ways, it's hard to know who or how or what set it all up, but it's an industry. I myself have been in it for now 20 years. This is my 20th year since I started full-time, you know, as a hunting quote-unquote professional.
Stay tuned to 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. Coming up after the break, we'll hop right back into it. The show is Nevada Backcountry. The guest is Tim Burnett from Hunt and House Archery Center here in Reno. Tim, I know you hate doing this stuff, but talk to me about the pieces of clothing coming out.
Okay. So the pant I'm wearing now, this is what we're calling the Rook 60. This is actually kind of a mid to early season pant. It's got a lot of good stretch into it. Just super comfortable. I mean, you'll wear these pants out faster than any other hunting clothes that you ever had because you're going to want to wear them every day. You know, they're just that comfortable, quiet. It was built as a bow hunting kit, but very durable. I wore the same pair of pants every single day of every hunt that I did this year. And then the next piece is a quarter zip. It's kind of a fleece, light fleece, quarter zip top that can act as a base layer or an insulative layer. And then we have a jacket that's, again, I think they call it a hard shell fleece.
Okay.
So the outside of it is more comparable. The feel of it is more comparable to like a neoprene, like a quilted neoprene or a fabric neoprene. But it's a polar fleece or a Sherpa fleece on the inside.
Gotcha.
Everything is built for durability and essentially as a bow hunting kit. You know,
okay.
Really. Because that's what we do. But it's plenty durable to handle anything else. And then I have a Rook 80 pant, which is an early season pant. That's actually the first piece we started with.
Okay, and the 80 is a heavy. Oh, it's lighter.
Lighter.
Okay.
It's 80 degrees. So 60 degrees is kind of the sweet spot for the Rook 60.
Yeah.
Where it's like, but for me, I mean, I'm out hiking in these in 30 degrees every morning.
Right.
So I don't care. Right. But the sweet spot is, it's hard to try to figure out because when you're shopping for clothes, you're like, well, how warm is this? What can it take me through? Well, this is kind of an early mid pant.
Yeah. Okay.
So it's kind of set up kind of like layers?
Yes. We don't have layers yet. We have basically the pants, the quarter zip, and the jacket. So two pants, quarter, and then we'll have the base layers. Then you have a puffy layer, and then you have a rain layer, you know. But the goal here is to become an apparel brand, you know,
if
I'm being honest, and to build a system that is not confusing, but that is very functional, you know, that we can have all the pieces to cover most parts of hunting. Obviously there's a lot of competition out there. There's some brands that do an amazing job and fill in all the pieces. And then they have all the lifestyle pieces and everything there. If I get to that point, great. You know, that's phenomenal, but really just wanting to build a very nice cohesive kit that'll carry me throughout the entire season.
Okay.
I can wear my own stuff every hunt that I go on.
And those, are they on the shop floor as of right now?
Yes.
They are. Okay.
Everything is on display at the shop. And like I say, as of Monday, we'll have inventory in there to be
ready to ship.
Yeah, our container is at the distributor in Salt Lake, so we're just waiting for them to get us our product that we need here. So
okay, Rook, are we talking chests? We talking birds? What are we?
Rook was just a name that I was going to call the camo pattern Rook.
Okay,
but I settled on Rook as the bow hunting, as just basically the fleece. The bow hunting fleece kit. And I don't even know why you have to have all these daggum names, you know, honestly. Like you have the attack pants, you have the slider, you have whatever, all these different names.
Equinox,
yeah. Which is a great, great pant, by the way.
Yeah.
But the scape is the camo pattern.
Okay.
You know, so it's like, it's the branding is always a funny thing. You got Solo Hunter, you got scape is the camo pattern, and you got the Rook collection. Like, why, you know? I got pants, quarter zip, and a jacket, essentially. So
perfect.
Then you'll have rain gear, puffy, whatever else, wherever else it takes us, besides bankruptcy. Hopefully it doesn't take us there.
Nah, don't do that to me, man. Yeah.
No.
Who else am I going to bug with my bad bow questions?
Yeah.
Who else is going to fix my things when they break, Tim?
Oh, yeah. No. We're on a good trajectory. I'm excited.
Especially with Henry.
Oh, yeah, buddy.
He's a constant.
Yes, I am.
How was that new bow, by the way?
He shot it fantastic in Vegas.
You shot the new one in Vegas?
Oh, yeah.
He shot really, really well with that. I was standing behind him and watching and rooting him on. And like, this dude's hitting the spot.
Dude. I did okay. Yeah. Dude. I shot my average.
Yeah, you shot a little bit above it, didn't you? A little bit.
Yeah, a little bit.
I mean, for a bow you just set up a week
you
before.
Literally just had it a week.
Yeah.
Before. Oh, yeah, if that. Yeah. No, I just figured it's a bow. I can shoot a bow. So I rolled down there and shot it and
One. That's a different bow, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
It's a different beast. Yeah.
Did you hear? Yeah. We actually talked about it on the show, I think.
Yeah, we did.
Did you?
And I talked about it with my dad, too, because I get, you could blame the industry I make my living in, but I think there's maybe occasionally a legitimate technical jump forward and stuff. And then there's people like me, marketing hype, right?
Yeah, right?
But I will say on those prime bows, there's something there with that center thing. I've had a few issues as far as going out to distance with it because of where it moves your sight and how your sight aligns. But outside of that, I think I've worked around that stuff at this point. Yeah, other than that, man, that thing holds steady.
Yeah.
And Dave's not kidding. I shoot a 292 the first day. Most people had a meltdown. I just kind of shot my bow.
That's great.
Yeah, it was good.
Yeah, it's getting used to something different. It's the same way with me. If I go backwards, or say if I go to a non-center grip bow, it takes me a minute, you know, to get used to it.
To get yourself adjusted to it,
But I'm at the point now where I kind of want to try everything. I kind of want to go across the board as a shop owner and as a participant in the sport of archery. I want to kind of branch out beyond what I've been so used to for 15 years. I shot the same brand of bow for 15 years.
It is fun to just grab the bows off the rack and just kind of throw them and just see how it feels for you.
Hey, moving off the bow stuff, can I switch gears and go back to the hunting media topic? With all the bad stuff pointed out, I will say, you know, there is that rising tide raises all ships. I will give a shout out to Brian Call, famously started the Gritty Bowman podcast. Mm-hmm. Brian does a bear hunting series. I think is it just called Gritty on YouTube?
So Gritty's his new brand.
Okay.
You know, aside from just Gritty Bowman, you know, that's where I was started, but now Gritty is his new brand. And he does that series with Ryan Lampers and now I think Mark Levesay and a couple of other guys that he goes up there with. He's got a good production crew, you know.
Have you watched any of that stuff?
Great. They do a great job.
It's phenomenal. And I think that's the product of all the hard work of people like you, all those that came before and kind of put some of that social media stuff out there and started promoting hunting like you did. So I understand some of your reservations and maybe some of the regrets you have with it. But I will say, I think it's cool now, the product that's out there for people like me when I'm bored to watch.
That's the hard part right there, right, Henry? Is if you were to pull me aside off camera, I'm done filming. I don't want to film anything ever again. I just want to hunt.
Yeah.
You know, I've been there, I've done it, but then I have to take a step back and look at, okay, well, what has that afforded me over the last 20 years? Because I was a dumb kid that took a piece of crap camera and was willing to go and film everything that he did and then have the balls to max out a couple of credit cards and put it on outdoor television, you know, national television, and then make a brand and a career and a business and, you know, generate wealth from it, right? You know,
right.
And create a following and a customer base. So part of me looks at that and says, well, I'd be pretty ungrateful if I did just drop and stop filming, because there's a bunch of people out there who want to see it or that learn from it, you know, or can benefit from it, aside from the entertainment side of it. So then you evolve it and you change it. It's like, well, then what can I do that's different? You know, at the time, filming yourself was unheard of. I mean, there was very few people that were doing it successfully. There weren't cell phones with cameras on it, so there was no such thing as a selfie.
Yeah, no,
you know, kidding. I've heard it said, you know, we're the selfie hunters, not solo hunters. But at the time, that was totally, totally different. A person has to step back and look at how groundbreaking that was then. You know, nobody broke that third barrier with the camera. People didn't talk to the camera. They talked to each other, you know. So it was off the charts, and that's why I think it soared to the top of the charts so quickly. But now everybody's doing it that way. Mm-hmm. So now if I look at Instagram or if I look at YouTube, I'm watching myself 20 years ago, you know, for the last 20 years, because everybody's doing it that way. Well, that makes me not like it. You know, I'm like,
all right, man, anything we didn't hit on, Tim?
I don't know. You guys are great. I appreciate the invitations. You know, I know we're all busy and
yeah.
have a lot going on, but it's good. And hopefully everybody out there, you guys out there listening, you know, you can get some value and give some feedback to these guys and let them know what you want to hear and what works and what doesn't work. And we want to better the community. You know, this isn't about thumping Tim's chest or Dave's chest or Henry's chest. We want everybody to feel a part of the hunting and specifically archery community.
Agreed.
And not feel intimidated or anything, you know, come by and get to know some of us. And hopefully with all the additional archery tags we're going to have this year, Dave.
Bum, bum, bum.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. Hopefully we get to see more of you this year.
Yeah,
you
know, exactly. Exactly. There's a lot of good people in that shop that can give you pointers and help you out.
Just don't let me find you on the mountain.
Yeah. Just don't be where I'm going to be.
That's the double-edged sword, right?
You know? So that was unit.
Not that tough. Because he lives in Fallon. Remember? He lives in Fallon.
I live in Tonopah.
Yeah, Tonopah. Yeah.
Well, shoot. So. Tim, sincere thank you for coming by. Appreciate it. Thanks for taking the time, because I know you're busy.
Yeah.
Likewise.